38. Puppenkopf. She finds herself on crowded Arbat. Leaving the squat behind Georgievsky, she drifted, unmoored by her experience of the creation. That segment with the beach pan she now knows is mapped on the one jagged edge of the T-arm, unthinkable intimacy. Through one street and the next until she'd come upon the red M of a metro station. Descending, she'd purchased, with too large a bill and some difficulty, tokens of what appeared to be luminous plastic, the color of glow-in-the-dark toy skeletons, each with its own iconic M. One of these had been sufficient for her voyage, whose directions and stations she now would never know. She'd given herself to the dream, in this case to the eerie Stalinist grandeurs of Moscow's underground, which had fascinated her father. That sense she'd had of some things here being grotesquely large had doubled underground, the lavishness of the stations exceeding even her childhood fantasies. Gilt bronze, peach marble shot with aquamarine, engine-chased Cartier lusters applied to the supporting columns of what seemed more like subterranean ballrooms than subway platforms, their chandeliers blazing, as if the wealth of what Wynne had called the final empire of the 19th century had come pouring in all through the deepest, darkest 30s to line these basilicas of public transport. So overwhelming, so exceedingly peculiar in its impact, that it actually succeeded in distracting her, knocking her at least partially out of whatever it was that she had been feeling as she descended those steep stairs to the clanging steel door, and out into the brightness that both startled and hurt. She has no idea where she'd gone, riding for at least 2 hours, changing trains on impulse, taking madly majestic stairs and escalators at random. Until finally she'd emerged here to find herself on Arbat, broad and crowded, which her "but it's really like" module keeps trying to tell her is really like Oxford Street, though really it isn't at all. Thirsty, she enters a vaguely Italian-looking, the match-up module failing again, establishment offering soft drinks and internet access, and buys a bottle of water and half an hour to check her mail. The keyboard is Cyrillic. She keeps accidentally hitting a key that toggles it back from English emulation, and then being unable to find it again. But she manages to retrieve a message from Parkaboy. "I like to think I'm as blasé as the next pretentious asshole, but your travel agent in London is, I've got to say, the business. As in, I'm in Charles de Gaulle in some kind of Air France cocoon hand-stitched from Hermès bridal leather, watching CNN in French and waiting to get on their next flight to Moscow. Trouble is, no fault of Sylvie's, something's upfucked the bomb sniffers here, and even we of the Uber class have to wait until planes can fly. So they've put all five of us in here with what I sort of hate to admit is the best cold buffet I've ever tasted, and they keep opening champagne. I may not have mentioned it before, but since the recent unpleasantness, I've been one of those people not too happy at the thought of flying, why I took that train to visit Daryl. However, with the rush of events and the sheer level of cosseting, I haven't until now been very aware of actually doing any. America sort of ended at check-in. And when they get the sniffer sorted here, I'm your way fast, though I may need to be taught to feed and wash myself again. You can help by arranging a supply of those little hot towels. Thanks again.